broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the Phil Hendry Show here, world famous and all that, here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows wish that they could, but they can't. On some good nights, they're not only glad that they can't go there, they don't really want to go there, because they see the mountain that we have to climb, and certainly being the men that we are here, on our radio show, we're able to climb it.
Yeah, it's just, they get scared, then they want to turn back.
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it, bud. This is a radio show that goes places the other shows get scared and turn back.
Like going up a mountain, man, like going up in the Alps.
Going up in the Alps?
Yeah, or like the Himalayas, not to call the Himmler. Yeah, Mount Himmler.
What's Mount Himmler? You talk about the Himalayas?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
What the hell is, what's Mount Himmler?
I thought, what's the big mountain?
Mount Everest.
Oh, that's right.
Mount Everest, that was the mountain. And by the way, climbing Mount Everest is not all that difficult. I don't know whether you know this or not. It's not. The reason why climbing Mount Everest is difficult is because the Chinese, for many, many years, would not allow us to climb Mount Everest coming from the Chinese side. We have to go by way of the Nepal side, which is lots of steep rock face, cliffs, and it's a very vertical climb. But if you go by way of the Chinese side, the incline is very, very gradual. And as a matter of fact, you can, I don't know how long it takes. I mean, if you want to climb Mount Everest from the Chinese side, but it's an extremely gradual climb, one that you can do quicker, and certainly one that is not as physically arduous. It takes the same amount of oxygen, obviously, and it probably takes the same amount of physical skill, but it's not the vertical, steep, rocky, craggy, and sometimes extremely dangerous climb that it is from the Nepal side. So that's something that...
Why don't you do it on the China side?
Yeah. The reason why we don't do it on the Chinese, when I say we, I say the people that don't live in China... is because the Chinese have kept mountain climbers out of their country. And the Chinese have kept mountain climbers out of... It may be the Tibet side, but China runs everything in Tibet, too. It might be because of their paranoia having to do with foreigners. And the Chinese, for many, many years, even though they have allowed Westerners and others from around the world access to their country since the early 80s, they're still a very, very paranoid government there, that Chinese government. Who knows? They may think that some of the mountain climbers are spies. Maybe they just don't want a whole bunch of foreigners running around in their country. So as a result of that, no one has ever climbed Everest. Not no one, but very few have ever climbed Everest from the...
But what's the name you call it, Everest?
Mount Everest. I misspoke.
Well, what's Himmler? What's Mount Himmler?
There ain't no Mount Himmler. That's what this jackball called it.
I thought it was the Himmler Mountains. Oh, okay.
You guys ought to get a geography lesson or something, man. Get out of, I don't know what, you know, a Rand McNally or something like that?
What's that?
A book, it's a book of maps. You know, geography's very important. And I don't need to tell you that in this day and age, we've got human beings that live in the United States of America, in this country, which is supposed to be a first world country, with an education level that is higher than most, with a literacy level that's higher than most, and yet we have human beings that actually walk around upright and eat with forks and spoons in this country that can't find, man, they couldn't find their own state on a map. See, there's all kinds of illiteracy, man. One of them is you can't read, you can't write. And there's another kind of illiteracy, geographic illiteracy, not being able to even locate America on a map or to know where. If I asked you right now, bud, where is Southeast Asia, would you be able to find it?
I don't know. Maybe. I know it's in Asia in the southeast part.
Yeah, that's easy.
Oh, is it easy, really? Well, then you'd have to find Asia first, wouldn't you?
Well, that's the hard part.
Uh-huh. I'd have to find Asia first.
Well, I would.
Anyway, our affiliate spotlight tonight, all right, guys, thank you very much. Our affiliate spotlight tonight on WKRS in Chicago and on the great people at KTRC in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and KMZE in Woodward, Oklahoma. Our affiliate spotlight here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Always a pleasure to have you guys along with us. We appreciate it very, very much. We've got a great network of stations. And, of course, we're on Phil TV and HD right now. We stream live on our website each and every night, each and every show. The Ugly Truth, there before you. in living color. Bobby and Steve Dooley are joining us right now. It is homecoming at a lot of high schools in and around Southern California and in and around the United States of America. Homecoming is when... I used to think, Bobby, homecoming was when there were... it was the first home game, you know?
For the football season.
Exactly, yeah.
No, I used to think that homecoming was where we got to go home. In other words, we got to take the day off or something on Friday or on Monday. Homecoming still is when students return. It's for the alumni.
Right.
Yeah, it's for alumni. It's students coming home to the high school and enjoying seeing other alumni and seeing their campus again and just being a part of a school that was important. High school is very important to all of us. And homecoming is also one of the big dances of the year. There is obviously a student body dance that occurs generally in the gymnasium or in one of the larger halls that are used for these kinds of conclaves or meetings among students or teachers. And at Western Estates, we use our gymnasium, where we have, obviously, our sporting events, basketball and volleyball. And homecoming, Phil, for everyone is important as, for everyone at the school, all of the students, is important as a social event. So you want to have a date, and you want to be able to go to your homecoming dance. There are a lot of awkward young men in high school that have not yet found a way to ask out a girl that perhaps they would like to ask out. Maybe they don't know how, and maybe they're a little shy. So what we are doing at the steering committee meeting for the homecoming dance, as well as in our homeowners association meetings, we're putting together a little raffle, and the young men in the junior and senior classes at Western States High School draw for the opportunity to take me to the homecoming dance.
To go with you?
Yes, to take me to the homecoming dance. And that way they have a date and they are able to go to the dance with, an attractive, and I'm not, I don't want to speak egotistically, but I think what I'm saying is basically I am attractive and I'm older, and I think any young man, I think, would enjoy going to a public event with an attractive woman who is socially, is not awkward and knows how to carry herself, and of course is a little bit older, so that there's a level of sophistication.
Understand, my wife's not saying, she's Jennifer Aniston or something like that, but she's an attractive woman.
Yeah, I'm not a movie star, Phil, but I am an attractive woman, and I think that I'm saying that not to be egotistical. I'm just saying that as a matter of course, so that you can understand why it would be kind of an interesting and, I think, a very motivating charity for our seniors and for our juniors.
All right. Let me ask you a question here. You call it a charity, so you're going to raise money?
Every raffle ticket that you buy, it's a raffle.
We're raffling off a date with Bobby.
Yeah, it's basically a raffle for a date with me for the homecoming dance. Every raffle ticket is $5, and the money is going to go to one of our associated charities for Western Estates, or the Western Estates Homeowners Association Associated Charities.
Does it go to anything having to do with the school?
Well, yeah, it could go to a scholarship for one of our students toward a college scholarship. It could go toward paying for books for some of our students that may not be able to afford them. Understand, Phil, that Western States High School is in a economically advantaged area, so we don't really have a lot of disadvantaged students from the standpoint of economics. But we do have students that certainly could use a hand with buying books or high school or college tuition, I should say.
Bobby and Steve Dooley have joined us here on the Phil Hendry Show. And the homecoming dance is coming up at Western Estates High School. They are conducting a raffle, and the winner of the raffle, if you're a junior or senior student, a junior or senior male student, the winner gets to take Mrs. Dooley to the homecoming dance. Now, let me just say the reason why I'm feeling...
I hear some hesitancy in your voice, and while I can't say that we didn't predict that this would happen, I want to say, Phil, that I think if you hesitate and you make sort of sounds as if you think there is something that is not quite right about this, I think people then are sort of led to believe there's nothing right about it.
And what do you mean by that? You say that people are influenced?
I think you influence people into thinking that it is improper for a junior or senior high school student to simply take on a date an older woman who is attractive, who carries herself very well. Phil, any boy that walks into that dance with me on his arm is immediately going to become a very admired. I think a lot of people will obviously gather around us, will want to talk to us, and I'm sure that I'll be asked to dance by a great many of the other young men there. So this is not something that's going to damage a young man.
Right, but okay, but you understand the hesitancy that I have, and maybe I'm off, to raffle off a date with the mother of one of the students.
Well, it's not unusual, Mr. Andrews. Mother is
Let me try. Still, as Steve was saying, it's not unusual. I am. I have done modeling. I'm very attractive. In other words, if one of the mothers was, shall we say, I don't know, Renee Zellweger, or you know, if one of the mothers was Kim Kardashian, and you raffled off a date with Kim Kardashian, do you think that there would be a problem?
Well, she's a big star.
What does that have to do with it?
Yeah, what's that got to do with it?
I don't know. The novelty of going out with a big star. Maybe to say, oh, wow, you know, I went on this date with this really famous woman, you know.
No, you're wrong. There's no difference. She's very attractive, and any young man would want to go out on a date with her. And the same is true of me. And again, I'm not being egotistical. It's just that it's sort of a given.
Yeah, it's pretty much everybody on stand by what, you know, good looking.
It's pretty much a given that I am attractive, and that to go on a date with me, I think, I don't think you need to imagine anything other than a very happy young man.
All right. Bobby and Steve Dooley have joined us here in our first hour to talk about the homecoming dance at Western Estates High School, in which there is a raffle, and the winner of the raffle, one of the junior or senior boys, I guess, who buys a raffle ticket, and these raffle tickets are $5 each. If he wins, he gets to take Mrs. Dooley to the homecoming dance. Your thoughts or feelings on the idea of a young man taking an older woman? I mean, there's obviously not going to be any hanky-panky, you know, nothing like that. But I wonder if it sends the wrong message. I wonder if it looks odd. I don't know. 877-876-PHIL is our number. 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, back with Bobby Dooley in just a moment.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL is our number, 877-876-7445. Bobby and Steve Dooley join me to talk about the homecoming at Western Estates High School. The homecoming dance is when, Bobby?
Phil, that's a week from this coming Saturday. I don't have my calendar with me, Steve. You?
No, on a week Saturday night.
It's a week from Saturday night, yeah. And so...
When are you going to draw the winner?
We will know the winner on Monday. We're going to give it a week. And,
okay, and so do you know how much money people have, and what we're talking about here, folks, Bobby, let me just bring people up to speed.
Sure.
They're raffling off to any junior or senior male student at Western Estates a homecoming date to the homecoming dance with Mrs. Dooley. And the raffle tickets are how much?
The raffle tickets are $5.
Okay, $5 each.
Yes, and the money can go to our, it goes to the Associated Charities of Western States High School, but as you, to answer the question that you asked, Phil, it's a very good question. That could mean tuition, it could mean books, it could mean going to a scholarship. But these are the associated charities that the school supports.
No, I understand that. I'm wondering how much money have you made so far?
Has the school made?
Has the school made, yeah.
My understanding is that the business has been very brisk. We have not been given a number. I would not really want to know what that number is because, you know, what we're trying to do, Phil, is encourage as many young men as possible to buy a raffle ticket. So if I were to say that there's this much money that's going into the that has already gone into the fund, people may think that they just don't have a chance at
They don't really have a chance, a shot at Bobby.
Yeah, a shot at going out with Bobby. So we don't want to let anybody know because we don't want to discourage any young man who has really had his heart set on going out with me to the homecoming to just give up because there's so many young men involved. The word that I got was business was brisk.
Well, that seems to indicate that there's a lot of young men then that have purchased raffle tickets.
That would indicate that, yeah, that would. The statement that I wanted to make, and I think, Steve, you have that written down?
I do, yeah. I might make it, too. Mr. I want to be clear that my wife's going to go out with these guys.
Well, hold on, Steve. I'll do it. We want to put the minds of parents at rest. We want to put the minds of our homeowners association, our board, at rest. At no time am I going to consider or make myself available for, in any way, shape, or form, any kind of physical contact with these young men. I'm very much aware that it would be inappropriate. I understand that it is a normal desire that young men are going to have. I'm a married woman, and I simply would not consider that. I wouldn't consider it to be right because I'm married, and also I don't want to be a what they call a blank teaser.
Not to mention it's illegal.
Well, yes, it's technically it's illegal. It's inappropriate, though, Phil. I think the more important thing to the more important message to get out there is it's inappropriate.
We just don't want any young man who's got my wife very attractive gonna try to put a move on her or something like that.
Right, right. Let me sort of cover this part of it, Steve, because it's very delicate. I think what Steve is saying when he says he doesn't want any young men putting the move on me or something like that.
No, I know what he's saying. He'd like the young men to remain young gentlemen.
Yeah, absolutely, Phil.
Okay, and I don't have any doubt in my mind that you probably have some very fine young gentlemen that go to that school. When I said, though, that it was illegal, that seems to be the overriding issue here. You know.
Well, it's an overriding issue to you and to other parents. It's an overriding issue to the law. It's an overriding issue to people that aren't really there and aren't really there in the midst of what's going on. And what's going on is obviously it's a young man who's very attracted to me and wants to,
get a first base or something.
Exactly. Wants to get the first base, wants to get the second base. And I just want parents to know I'm not going to let that happen.
Well, getting to first base and second base, that seems very crude.
In what way?
Well, we don't even have to. I don't think we need to discuss this in terms of this being a normal date between a young man and a young woman. You know.
But what is abnormal about it, other than the fact that obviously, Phil, I'm much older and I'm married, and it is a charity event. But there's nothing abnormal about a young man dating me and being attracted to me.
No, I don't think that there is, but when you said he's not going to get to first base or second base, it sounds as if you're treating it in a not a cavalier light, but in almost in an adolescent light.
No, I don't think so. I understand why you feel that way. Let me help you. While adolescents do have to worry about that, as an adult woman who is attractive and who has kept her body over the years, I also have to worry about that. If I were a normal-looking 39-year-old woman, the boys wouldn't be attracted to me. But
all right, hold on. We got to take a break. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-7445. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL is the number, and on the line with me is Bobby and Steve Dooley as we talk about the homecoming dance there at Western Estates and Western Estates High School. It's going to be taking place a week from Saturday, 13, 14, 15, so that's the 22nd, Bobby, I think is the date on that.
Okay, the 22nd is a Saturday.
Right, that's what I mean. It's a week from...
It's a week from this Saturday, right. So that would mean what?
Tell me about the 15th then.
It's the 15th.
No, it's the 22nd, this Saturday.
Oh, I'm sorry. This Saturday, yes, you're absolutely right, Phil. It is the 22nd, and we're really excited about it. And I don't really want, if I could say this, Phil, I don't want people to focus in on the fact that these boys, whoever wins the raffle, will be taking me to the homecoming dance. I don't want to focus on that because I don't want anyone out there, any parent whose son may win this raffle, to be concerned with the possibility of their son wanting to, or me allowing, or something happening whereby we can't help ourselves and something intimate takes place.
No, I would imagine that's not going to happen. Because you're an adult woman.
Well, that's true, too, Phil. But also, the fact that I'm going to take some precautions. We have, and I don't think I'm talking out of school here, Steve. Can I say this?
About Chastity?
I don't think I'm talking out of school if I say that I'm going to, and I think it's a normal thing, and I want mothers and fathers to feel better. I'm going to wear a chastity device, a chastity belt-type device.
Well, I don't think that was necessary to say. And I have to say...
Well, sorry, Mr. Henry, but I think it was necessary to say, given the line of questioning that you've been going down tonight.
I haven't brought up any questions tonight, Ms. Dooley, that have been... You have volunteered, you can listen back to the tape. You volunteered all the information about third base. You volunteered all this information about...
You never said third base. Third base when you get your...
Third base is when he puts his hand down your P-A...
Okay, please, all right?
Well, you never said that.
I never said anything about third base.
When you were talking about second... You're right, I apologize. Second base, first base, you brought up the possibility of intimate contact.
Well, I felt I had to, Phil, because it's going to be on the mind of any young man who is going to go out with an older woman who is... You know, hot, and that's going to happen. And
all right, but the record clearly shows that you brought it up. So to go further down this line of questioning, as you call it, you saying that you're going to wear a chastity belt, I think is a little, is as they used to say, TMI. And
I didn't say I was going to wear a chastity. What I said was a chastity device.
Yeah, for Mr. Anders, for a chastity implementer. It's a piece of equipment.
Steve, if you've got the picture of it, Steve, yeah, it's equipment that we rent. So it's not anything...
It's equipment that you rent?
Yes, it's equipment that you rent. And
Where do you rent this? I'm curious.
No, Mr. Stranger, you don't rent it from U-Haul.
Oh, my God. Is that what you think?
No, you don't.
I didn't think you rent it from U-Haul, but you said that this is a... Ms. Dooley, did you not say that this was a chastity device?
I said that it was, what did you call it, Steve?
But it's a chastity equipment or a chastity...
It's equipment that you rent For the purpose, yes, of keeping your chastity.
I've never heard of renting something like that. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we talk here with Bobby and Steve Dooley, and we're discussing the homecoming that is going to be happening at Western Estates. Vernon, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, Phil, I'm very happy to be on your program tonight. I'm a teacher myself. And
can you speak up a little bit, sir?
Yes, sir, if you can hear me now.
Yeah.
I said that I'm very happy to be on your program tonight. I'm a teacher myself, and I'd very much like to speak to the woman that you got on your broadcast right now, if I could.
Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Bobby.
And your name is Bobby, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, Bobby Dooley, correct?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Dooley, I'm a teacher, and I've been listening to what you've been saying about going out on a homecoming dance with a boy who is a junior or a senior. And there are a number of things that I have, Ryan, if you could just hear me out, there's a number of things that are wrong with this. And
you speak up, I'm not kidding.
What did you say?
My husband asked if you'd speak up because he can't hear you.
I didn't understand. Your husband...
What, Mr. Dooley, hold on, sir. Mr. Dooley, are you listening on the radio?
No, I'm listening on the phone. He
listens in on the phone on the extension.
Okay, well, sir, I can't conduct the technical aspect of this show with you in mind. It would be better if you listen to the radio.
Yeah, I'm talking to the lady. I didn't know I was talking to a man.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to ask the lady. I understand. I'm a teacher, and...
Yeah, you said that already.
Right, well, I may say it a few more times. You know, I'm a teacher, and you're going out with students, and you said you're hot, and you're going to wear a piece of chastity equipment, as you call it, that you rent. And I agree with Mr. I think I'm on board with Mr. Henry and probably a lot of listeners, but I just had to scratch my head at that one. And I understand, ma'am, that, you know, you probably going to go out with a young boy, and you're put together pretty good, and I probably understand that. But I don't see how it is going to help the educational process, how it's going to help the educational environment for you to be parading yourself around in a gymnasium. And
well, I'm not going to be parading myself around, okay?
If I could just finish, parade yourself in a gymnasium. Are you going to wear pants or are you going to wear pants or a dress?
Hold on, Steve. I've got it. I'm probably going to wear a cocktail dress.
And probably, if you wear a cocktail dress, probably.
You okay, sir?
I'm fine. This woman's going to walk around in a gymnasium in a cocktail dress. You know as well as I do, a lot of those cocktail dresses are painted on. And I think you know what I mean, ma'am. So you're going to be showing it. And
what do you say when you say showing it? What does that mean?
I mean you're going to be strutting around, and every boy in that place is going to be looking at it, and I wonder if.
What do you mean it?
What do you mean every boy is going to be looking at it? Are you talking about me? I'm a woman, all right, and I deserve respect, okay?
Yes, I do respect you, ma'am.
I don't want to be talked about as if I'm a piece of meat. I'm going to go in there wearing a very, very classy cocktail dress, really hugs, you know, the curves, and a little bit of eye candy, really shows off what I've got. But don't talk about me like I'm a piece of meat.
Well, that's pretty interesting, Ms. Dooley.
Who was that?
Phil Henry, the host of the show.
What do you mean it was pretty interesting?
What's very interesting to say that you're not a piece of meat, but you're going to be wearing something that really shows off what you got.
Yeah, there you go, Mr. Henry. I heard that, too.
Well, what I mean, Phil, is I certainly am not going to go to that dance to try to bore my date.
I'm just, as a high school teacher, and you're not a high school teacher. You're a mother who's going to wear a dress so tight that it'll make a lot of people have a hard time, you know, get... man, why can't you date? Oh, man.
What's wrong?
I don't know.
Don't be like you have a hard time. Don't my wife.
What? Do you wish you could go out with me yourself?
I wish you'd just date men your own age, you know. And if you did, that'd mean I'd have half a shot.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. I don't, you know, this is it's a raffle for the boys. It's a raffle for our young boys who want to, you know, go to the homecoming dance with someone who looks good as opposed to what they're left with, which is one of the high school girls. And obviously at that age, you know, the pickings are slim. You have girls that are battling skin problems. You have girls that are battling weight problems. You have girls that are awkward. Their personal grooming and their hygiene is not yet up to speed. And the boys aren't sure. Should I ask her out? Should I not? Am I going to be embarrassed? What is she going to do? Is she going to wear something stupid looking? Am I going to have to walk around? I'll never forget my son, Steve. My son, Seth, I mean. But we almost called him Steve Jr. He came home from a dance one night, and he was almost in tears because he said he picked the girl up at her house. Steve, do you remember this?
I do remember, yeah.
He picked the girl up at her house, and she was wearing, and these are his words, a Peter Pan collar. Now, do you know what a Peter Pan collar is?
No, ma'am, I do not.
It's a collar that goes, like, halfway up the back of the head. It's almost like, Steve, you had a better description.
It's like a Count Dracula's cape.
It was a Count Dracula cape. And he was almost in tears because all the boys that night kept saying to him, you better get her home before sunrise and make sure her native soil is in the box. And
all right, so the kids were kidding him about his date wearing a Dracula cape. So what?
So what?
And why don't you teach a young man that he doesn't have to listen to his friends or other idiots, that he makes a girl feel comfortable, he makes her feel pretty. It doesn't matter what she's dressed as or what she looks like. You know, I mean, isn't this the way we're supposed to train a young man when he goes out with a girl?
Well, Mr. Henry, I think there's only so much that you can do.
Mr. Henry, you said it right there. I agree with everything you're saying. Because I went out with a young lady once, the same situation. She showed up at the door, and she had on some kind of a costume. It was a pantsuit or something. I'd never seen anything like it before in my life. And I also wanted to cry because I realized I had a solid 6 hours ahead of me with her because we were going to a play and then we were going to go to dinner, and then I had to drive her home. And she was wearing I can't describe it. It looked like it was made out of burlap. And it had a...
All right, I understand, sir. I don't need to know what the exact thing was. What I'm saying to Ms. Dooley is, don't we teach our young men, if they pick a girl up on a date, no matter what she's wearing, you make her feel pretty and comfortable, and you make her feel as if she is the belle of the ball, and you're a respectful person.
Of course we do, Phil, but you can't expect a young man to pick a girl up on a date and have her come to the door looking like Peter Pan. And
you look like Peter Pan, Phil. Don't do that.
Hey, you know what? Call me Mr. Henry if you don't mind.
What?
Call me Mr. Henry if you don't mind.
What get called Phil?
That's your wife. I don't like you calling me Phil.
What, Pete?
I think you missed his question. Do you want a young man picking a girl up at the door who has a Peter Pan costume on?
She didn't have a Peter Pan costume on, you said. She was simply wearing a cape or something that had a high collar. All these guys are giving him crap about her getting her home and getting her into her native soil. Isn't that right?
Yes.
That's not Peter Pan.
That's what you... Boy, I really feel sorry for you.
Phil, I got to just jump in. Peter Pan had to get home to his native soil, yeah.
No, are you people crazy? That's Dracula. Vampires. Peter Pan didn't have to get home to any native soil. Peter Pan flew. Peter Pan was some friend of kids.
Well, what do you call Peter Pan?
What do I call Peter Pan? Some kind of a made-up mythical figure. But one thing I know about Peter Pan didn't have to get home and get into a box of his native soil before sunrise. That's Dracula.
Mr. Henry, I'm looking up Peter Pan right now at Wikipedia.
Well, you guys get out of here with that. I got to take a break. Look up Peter Pan in Wikipedia. Yeah, you do that, man, and find out whether it was Peter Pan and had to get home to a box of his native soil or not. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show, Bobby and Steve Dooley, and more of your calls at 877-876-PHIL.
Truth
is our bitch, The Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And Bobby and Steve Dooley with me here. If you're on Phil TV and HD, we have... do you see that, Ms. Dooley?
Yes, I'm looking at a picture of Dracula.
That's right. Now, the other picture that we'll put up for you, that's Dracula. That's the guy who had to get home to get to his native soil in time before the sun came up because Dracula is, you know, the undead or whatever you want to call him. This is Peter Pan. If you're looking on Phil TV and HD, you'll see there, Peter Pan.
That is the individual that my understanding was needs to get into the native soil.
Yeah, that's what Peter Pan got to get in the box.
Peter Pan doesn't get into a box of native soil. If we're having this discussion about a Peter, why are we talking about this?
Bill, you fixated on the fact that my son, who was legitimately humiliated by a girl wearing a Peter Pan outfit. And
you said a Peter Pan collar. And by the way, looking at this Peter Pan picture, I don't see any Peter Pan collar.
I see the hat with a pork pie hat.
Yeah, do you see the pork pie hat?
That's not a pork pie hat. That's a regular hat with a feather in it. A pork pie hat. Do you even know what a pork pie hat is?
Do you?
Yes, I do. It's a round, silly-looking hat that I think was in vogue in the late 19th, early 20th century. That hat is not a pork pie hat.
What about that flying kid?
What flying kid?
The flying kid right there with the bumper chute.
That's a little boy wearing a top hat.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Phil, not to interrupt you, but you're sitting here making excuses for parents that are concerned as to whether or not I am going to put the move on their son. I would never do any such thing. I'm worried about their sons putting their paws all over me. And while I'm worried about that and trying to understand that, you're talking about flying boys in top hats. Now think about that. Think about the sexual implications. Think of the Freudian aspect to that. And then you'll know why I'm frightened, very frightened for you.
I don't understand what you... You know what? You can say anything you want about me, Ms. Dooley. You haven't made any sense. What do you mean the Freudian aspects of a kid flying with a top hat? It's got nothing to do with anything. You brought up the sexual aspects, possibilities, and so on and so forth of you dating or going on this homecoming raffle date with a junior or a senior. When I said to you that any sexual contact between the two of you would be illegal, you said, well, more to the point, Phil, it would be inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. And what did I have for breakfast this morning?
Yeah, what did we have for breakfast this morning, Ms. Henry?
What did I have for breakfast this morning?
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, you know everything else about me. You know everything that I've said. What did I have for breakfast this morning?
Yeah, were there corn kernels in it this morning?
You know something? Hold on, Phil. What did you say?
That's Mr. Hendry, if there were corn kernels in it. Ow! Ow!
Now, do you want it? You wanted the other side, too?
Ow!
What are you doing?
That's my husband, and I'm on the radio, and he just asked you if you could count the corn kernels in it.
Well, Ms. Dooley, your husband's got no class, which I've been, that has been my impression over the course of this hour. That's your problem for you to start smacking a guy while we're on the air. I had no idea. We started out talking about a homecoming dance.
He's not going to sit right there, Steve.
I haven't heard it before.
You're talking about how many... He's asking me why I had to hit it. Why I had to hit him. What up?
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. Margaret. Hi, Margaret. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, Phil. I know Bobby very well. Bobby, how are you? I'm fine. Ms. Dooley and I have had our run-ins over the past. We've debated a number of different issues, and I'm very, very familiar with your homeowners association. Well, you know, before you go any further, and excuse me, but I'm talking. And what you just did to your husband on the air, if I were Phil Hendry, I would call the police. You know something, Margaret? I've heard you do exactly the same thing to your husband. No, you have not heard that. My husband has struck me. How many times have I said, please, Frank, not in the face? Yes, and how many times has he ignored that? Because obviously, looking at you, you've taken a beating in the face. why you love.
Is Ms. Gray there?
Hung up.
She hung up. She probably thinks she's getting in her car and coming over here. Not going to happen.
All right, Bobby, I appreciate very much your time with us tonight. I don't think it was very fruitful.
Why not, Phil? I mean, I'm going out on a date with a junior or a senior. They're not going to get their hands on my butt.
All right, I understand that, and you're wearing a chastity belt, and so everybody feels so much better about you. You'll be going out on a date with a junior high school or a senior high school kid wearing a chastity belt, and he's not going to get to first, second, or third base with you. All of those marvelous, marvelous reassurances, I'm sure, makes everyone feel better.
Well, you're making it sound like I'm a complete and utter imbecile, Phil, and nothing could be further from the truth. And I think your audience understands that I have very clearly and very, I think, very succinctly described what this date represents in terms of charity and in terms of the event. And what I got for my trouble was you showing me pictures of Peter Pan for whatever Freudian kick you're getting out of that, and a boy that flies in a top hat. And
I know, you brought up the Peter Pan caller that your son...
I don't have a daughter.
No, that your son said that he went out with a girl with a Peter Pan caller.
Nice grammar.
Never mind.
Way to talk.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, welcome back. You're the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Paul McCartney was recently married to a young lady by the name of Nancy Shevel. She is the heir apparent, I think, to a large amount of money here in the United States. I believe it's trucking money, if I'm not mistaken. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Jim Sadler in just a moment about Paul McCartney and about his new wife and about what McCartney's life must have been like or must be like these days. One can only imagine losing the love of his life, Linda McCartney, the mother of his children, and then going through this divorce with this other individual whose name escapes me, and I don't really... Heather something, you know?
Yeah, but Heather... Yeah, one leg is all I know about it.
Yeah, okay, fine, bud. But the point is that, I think it was very interesting to watch that unfold, that divorce, the separation and divorce, because at the end of the day, this woman got no sympathy from anybody. And Paul McCartney, of course, was seen by fans and by onlookers and observers and those that follow these kinds of things as being... the victim of someone who obviously was trying to get her hooks into him. So,
I don't understand that, man. Say she's trying to get her hooks into him. She had one leg, man.
What about it? So what if she had one leg?
Well, I mean, you know, if she had one leg, I mean, is it okay we talk about this?
Well, hold on. You know what? I'm going to do something.
Well, I just want to say something.
All right, hold on. I just want to do something. Rather than keep telling you guys to shut up, what I should have is a regular Bud and Robert debate. What do you guys think about that?
What do you mean a debate?
Yeah.
A debate, which what you guys do anyway. You're always disagreeing with each other. I'll let you guys disagree with each other for a period of time. What do you think?
I don't know. I just want to be able to express my opinion without him saying everything that he says. Always trying to play the race card.
I'm playing a race card. You play the race card all the time because you don't like black people.
I don't say that, okay?
All right, that's boring. What you guys are talking about now is boring as hell. Why don't you talk about this Paul McCartney thing later? Not now, okay?
What Paul McCartney thing?
Yeah.
What you were just talking about, you idiots. You're talking about the what's her name? The one with the one leg?
Oh, yeah. Well, my opinion...
I don't want to hear your opinion right now. I'll listen to your opinion later. Right now, I want to get my guest on the phone. If you don't mind, his name is Dr. Jim Sadler. He's in San Diego. And right now, I think he's at Lindbergh Field or at the San Diego International Airport waiting for a late-night flight down to Dallas, Texas for a seminar. And we appreciate you being with us, Dr. Sadler. How are you doing this evening?
Really good, Phil, and thank you, and to all of your listeners, I received a great many wonderful cards and birthday wishes this past week.
Oh.
And so I'd like to say thank you to them, and I want to also
express my appreciation for the good wishes for the recovery of my wife, Tammy, who broke her leg. We were doing some rock climbing in Arizona a month ago, and she, a poor girl, broke her leg.
Is she all right?
She's fine, Phil. She's on the mend. And I want to also thank your listeners for very kind letters and cards that we got concerning that.
All right. You know, tonight I want to talk, Dr. Sadler, about the marriage of Paul McCartney, this most recent marriage. This would be Paul McCartney's third marriage, I think. I'm not really sure.
No, it's his third marriage. His first marriage was to Linda McCartney. He never married. And I think what you're probably referring to, or you probably is probably confusing you, is Jane Asher.
And that's right. So he never married Jane Asher.
He never married Jane Asher. She was the sister of Peter Asher, who was a famous singer and songwriter in his own right, with a group called Peter and Gordon. And then he went on to become a producer. He produced Linda Ronstadt and James Taylor and some others.
Okay, so it was to Linda McCartney that Paul McCartney.
Peter Asher was not married.
No, I know that. That Paul McCartney.
That is correct, yes.
That Paul McCartney initially married and then married this Heather Graham?
I think her name was Heather Graham. Heather Graham's the actress. It was Heather.
Hold on for a minute. What'd you say, Dan? Heather Mills.
Heather Mills. I don't think it was Heather Mills. I think you're thinking of Haley Mills.
No, I'm not thinking of Haley Mills. No, I think Dan's right. It was Heather Mills.
Well, all right. I'll take your word for that, but it's that's a tough one. That's a very difficult one to for me to accept. I for some reason the name Mills, but nonetheless, it's not important. The third wife is this one, Chevelle, and I made the joke at a conference I was at. Last week, I said that Paul McCartney married the young lady named Chevelle, and I said, is her middle name this? And I got a couple of laughs from the guys there. Jim Belmonte, who is one of the doctors. You understand what I said, Phil, right?
That her middle name is Dis, as in Nancy Dischevel?
That's right, yeah.
That's funny.
Well, it's a way to break up... a lot of what at these conferences, you get tense, and as the week goes by, it goes on and 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 on, you know, and you get tenser and tenser and tenser as the week goes on, because these conferences are unending, and everyone's presenting a paper, and everyone wants to be published, and at the end of the conference, you know that most of what you listen to is unpublishable. You're not too impressed with what your colleagues have been able to come up with, and your paper, which you researched and which you have a great genius for, if I dare say, Phil. No one seems to care. No one seems to want to listen to you, and you go home very dispirited. And
okay, Doc, you're talking a lot about this conference. I want to talk about Paul McCartney.
That's what I'm getting to, Paul McCartney. I started out because I told the joke at the conference.
And you told a joke at the conference about what?
I said that I told the joke about Nancy Dischevel.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and so I got home and I decided I'd look into the Paul McCartney marriage a little bit deeper because of the name Dischevel. I didn't want anyone to think that I was... I was treating lightly the marriage of this man to this woman, Chevelle. So I looked into it, and I also looked into the dynamic of Paul McCartney and his relationship to the other members of the Beatles. I looked at the long-standing marriage he had with Linda. I looked at, and it was a very good marriage, and it was a fruitful marriage. They had children. I believe one of his daughter is a fashion designer. His son, I think, is involved in the music business. They loved their father very much, a very tight family.
And you could see that after Linda died. You could see how the family really pulled together.
Very, very, very tight family. Then comes this Heather, we'll call her Mills, if that's what your producer said. I doubt seriously if that's her last name, but...
I think it is, but nonetheless, you know.
Well, all right. I want to go on the record as saying I don't believe that that's... If she said that's her last name, I think she's lying. Anything she says, I don't believe. Did she say that's her last name?
I don't know. I mean, Yes, she did. Probably she likes to go by the name McCartney now, you know.
But did she say her last name was Bill?
I guess so, Doc, yeah.
All right, then I don't think it is her last name. Because I think the woman's a liar. Yeah.
Well, are you saying she's some kind of an imposter? Are you saying she never did any of the things that she claims to have done?
Well, what did she claim to do? Step on a landmine? You know, because she's got the leg, you know.
That's not funny.
Well, all right. You know, Mr. Henry, I'm here on your program. I know you've got, you know, guests, and I'm trying to lighten the mood and give you...
Just allow me to conduct the interview. I'll lighten the mood. I just need information from you. All right, so his second marriage, we all know how that went, and now here is the third marriage.
All right, well, and the third marriage, in my opinion, for Paul McCartney, is not a marriage out of love. I think Paul McCartney married for love when he married Linda, and I think that was the love of his life. I then think that he made another stab at being happy and being in love. And by being in love, not the same way that he was with Linda, because he would never have that again, and he knows that. But perhaps he could have love at this stage of life. Perhaps he could have love with a Heather as a new friend, as a new mate, and discover new things about life. And that didn't happen. We found out that that marriage, too, that marriage, unlike the marriage to Linda, that marriage was went very, very wrong. So I think now Paul McCartney, with all of the money that he has made, and the one thing that no one's talked about, Paul McCartney is a survivor. Paul McCartney's the only one left. John Lennon, his partner and...
Well, Ringo Starr.
Ringo Starr, you're right. But when I say he's the only one left, he's the only one of the Beatles that is, you know, that
what, is a songwriter?
Well, that anyone really, I don't want to say cares about, but I think that if Ringo were to die, I don't think anybody really noticed as much as they do.
Well, I got to disagree with you there, Doc.
Can I finish what I'm saying?
Go ahead.
Wow. Boy.
Go ahead.
All right. I was going to say that if Ringo were to die, I don't think anyone would care.
Okay. Can I disagree now?
Yeah.
I totally disagree. Ringo Starr, in and of his own, in just his own personality alone, was very unique and very, people like him. And from the very first time the Beatles, hit the international scene, Ringo was a colorful character and a colorful member of the group. To say that no one will care...
All right, well, thank you, Phil, for ruining and ripping to shreds a premise that I have that leads up to what I want to say. Thank you for taking that and just ripping it to shreds in front of my very eyes. It's like watching a dog, a pet dog, being thrown off a cliff. And not even...
No, it's not that bad. I was disagreeing with you about Ringo Starr.
Well, it was part of what I was trying to say. If that's all right with you.
I apologize, all right? So Ringo Starr's not that important, and so therefore...
So therefore, Paul McCartney is the only one left of any creative import. Is that all right? Is that okay with you?
Were you talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you. Is that okay if I say it that way?
Don't...
Is that okay with you? Does that meet with your approval?
Don't be a child, Doctor.
I'm not being a child, but I...
Just finish what you have to say. I got to go to a break.
Paul McCartney feels guilty because he has survived. He feels guilty because John Lennon is not here to enjoy the life that Paul McCartney's had. John Lennon is not here to enjoy the continued adulation of the fans. John Lennon is not here to absorb and to luxuriate in and to appreciate and to embrace the fans, the music, and the life that was entitled to him, that John Lennon earned, that John Lennon should have had, that John Lennon should have enjoyed. He didn't get to enjoy that. He was gunned down by a madman on the streets of New York. Paul McCartney got to have that life. I believe Paul McCartney has married a woman that he doesn't love, that probably can barely stand, that he can probably barely stand being in the same house with.
because he wants to punish himself out of the guilt that John Lennon's still here. John Lennon is not here, and that Paul McCartney's not here either. Or that, that John Lennon's here and Paul McCartney got shot.
No, John Lennon...
I'm sorry. John Lennon got shot and Paul McCartney shot him. Or not...
Paul McCartney's still here.
Paul McCartney's still here, and John Lennon is not.
And so he married a woman that he can barely stand being...
Well, laugh up. You know, you asked my opinion. And
okay, we'll be back with more here from Dr. Jim Sadler. It's a very interesting premise. Paul McCartney, because he feels guilt that he's here and John Lennon isn't, that he had the life that John Lennon didn't get to have. Paul McCartney now knows that he can't marry for love. He tried that with Heather. That went south. The love of his life, Linda, is gone. So now he's married to torture himself. He's married to a woman that he can barely stand being in the same house with because he wants to suffer for... We'll be right back with more from Dr. Jim Sadler on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Boy, that's stretching the truth.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me is Dr. Jim Sadler, and we're talking about the recent betrothal of Paul McCartney to Nancy Shevel, his third marriage. And, of course, for those of us who are fans, I'm sorry if you're not a fan of the Beatles or Paul McCartney, and it's perfectly legitimate not to be. This kind of conversation probably bores you, but... What we are talking about is, and it's a very unusual take, Doctor, you're saying that Paul McCartney got married not because he loved this girl, not because he wanted to be happy, but because he wanted to...
Oh, I just heard you yawn.
Yes, I did.
Oh, man.
Hey, Doc?
Well, what's the point, you know? I've been on a million... I've never had anybody yawn in the middle of an interview with me.
All right, I'm sorry if I yawned. I apologize. The problem is I...
I'm boring?
You're not boring. But when you say to me that it sounds a little dull that a guy is going to marry a woman because he can't stand the sight of her, I just... For me, you know, I'm not buying that.
Well, if you don't have to buy it, but it sounds dull.
It sounds made up.
No, sir. What do you mean made up? I didn't marry her. Paul McCartney married her. Paul McCartney, who had the life that John Lennon didn't have, who had the joy and the continued accolades that John Lennon never got to see. Okay, the song that came out, it wasn't very good, but it was the John Lennon never got to see that. John Lennon never lived to see a lot of the things that Paul McCartney got to do, and everything like that. And so, Paul McCartney, after the beautiful marriage to Linda, I just think that Paul McCartney now has given up on ever having love, and has decided the best thing he can do is to pay back John Lennon for all the years that he got to have that John Lennon didn't get to have.
And are you saying pay back John Lennon, or more to the point, punish himself?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think there certainly is, and I think you're right, Phil. I think there is a lot of self-punishment. I think Paul McCartney is saying, I've got to do something to make this right. If I can't bring John Lennon back from the dead, God knows I can't do that, then I need to put myself through some form of agony that only a rock star would understand. And what do you think that form of agony is? That's for a rock star. Do you know, Mr. Henry?
I couldn't begin. What form of agony unique to a rock star?
Unique to a rock star, yes, would be to willingly force yourself into a marriage with a woman who you can't stand the sight of for more than a few seconds without getting sick in the street.
And oh, come on, man. I mean, where do you get the indication that that's the case at all?
I'm speaking as a 25-year clinical psychologist. I read people's, you know, how they do things.
Well, you're the psychologist, sir. Their behavior.
I read that. And I read it, man, I read it like the back of my hand. I read it, there's a wonderful book called A Man and His Symbols by Carl Jung. And in it, we see the symbols. And Paul McCartney is using a very basic symbol of mother, only he's perverted it. Mother was Linda. Mother was Heather. But now mother is not Linda or Heather. Now mother is Nancy Shevel, and he can't stand to look at her for more than half a second without feeling his guts turn over.
How do you know that? How do you know that?
I'm basing it on 25 years of psychology.
That's not an answer, though, Doc. You know...
Please don't call me Doc, please. I understand, Mr. Henry, that it makes people feel comfortable, and maybe you... I don't know, you think you're Bugs Bunny or something? I don't know what you're doing.
I call doctors Doc because it is very casual, and yes, it makes people... Yes, it does make people comfortable.
Well, it makes me feel uncomfortable because I worked very hard to be called doctor. Do you remember when Barbara Boxer said, please call me senator?
Yeah. Okay, I get it, all right? So I'll call you doctor. I apologize. Anything that I have to go through that freaking Barbara Boxer story again. All right, so we're talking here about about Paul McCartney. And
okay, see, John Lennon, you're thinking about John Lennon. And you wouldn't do that had I not brought up the fact that McCartney is now in agony. It gets us all to think about the guy that really... really got hosed, if you want to use the word, and that's John Lennon. Paul McCartney got all the goodies. John Lennon didn't get anything but shot. Now, Paul McCartney is married to a woman that he can't breathe the same air with without getting physically ill.
All right, we'll be back. We'll be back with Dr. Jim Sadler in a moment of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
You know what I'm saying, right?
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and Phil Hendry Show's Phil TV in HD. And I mention that because we have on our Phil TV screen right now a picture of Paul McCartney with Nancy Shevel. They are together, Dr. Sadler, and he looks like he's thoroughly enjoying her company. And she's a beautiful woman. And more to the point, she comes from money, okay?
No, I understand that, Phil. Yeah.
All right, but just hear me out. So she knows what it's like to have bread. She doesn't seem like she's going to be sticking her mud hooks into this guy for his money. And in the photographs that I've seen with the two of them together, they both look very, very happy.
Well, first of all, Phil, I'm not talking about the money aspect. I'm talking about whether or not he is going to be happy with this woman. Now, she comes from trucking money. She's an American. First of all, she's not European, so that makes her very, very different from being a European. She's an American. American women, we all know what they like. They know what they want. They push their way to it and push their way to it until you really are challenged as a man. I'll give you an example, Phil. And I'm a psychologist. I'm married to a woman who is 30 years my junior. My wife, Tammy, is 23. That, is, in and of itself, presents a great many challenges. She's very young. She's very youthful. It's like having a little girl in the house sometimes rather than a wife. And I have told her repeatedly that we don't want to have the Halloween candy out this early because people can only resist that for so long. Now, this is a small thing, but just hear me out. This is an American woman I'm talking about, my wife. And I told her, I said, don't put the Halloween candy out this early. People can't resist it. And what did she do? She went ahead and I came home and there's Halloween candy. And my jaw hits the floor and I said, I told you, no Halloween candy. What we do in my home and what we do in our marriage, and Tammy has agreed to this, and I want you to be very, please hear me, Phil, are simulated acts of domestic discipline. And what that means is these are simulated. I never, ever physically connect with Tammy. I pretend as if I'm punching her, but I miss. I pretend as if I'm hitting her in the stomach. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I have never heard of anything so ridiculous in my entire life.
Well, Phil, before you go into your usual talk radio host judgment, if you don't mind, if you'll just listen to me.
Dr. Sadler, you know, I've had you on many times, and you've said to me, listen to me.
I'm asking you to listen to me this time, yes.
Okay, simulated beating is what you're talking about.
No, I didn't say that.
No, I know what you said, but what you mean is simulated beating.
No, I did not mean it. What I said and what I meant was simulated acts of domestic, you know, there are times when I almost utter the Lord's name in vain. I get so frustrated with people. Simulated acts of domestic aggression.
Simulated acts of domestic aggression. So you pretend like you're slugging her?
Yes. It's something any stuntman in the movies knows. I pretend like I'm going to wail, like I'm wailing on just her face. Now, please hear me out, Phil, because this is very important. You never, ever, ever touch the woman. Never. But you act out. And in so doing, your wife understands just how important this was to you. By the same token, you get out the physical aggression of swinging your fists, and you never make contact with her, and you go about your business. For instance, when I said to her, I don't want the Halloween candy out until 2 days before Halloween, it's always been a Sadler rule. I had it with my first wife, I had it with my first two wives, and I had it with the woman that I lived with before I married Tammy. Now comes Tammy, and all of a sudden, she does what she wants to do? No. I said to her, the Halloween candy don't go out until 2 days before Halloween.
And by the way, doctor, for a man who's educated with some 8-9 years of you know, higher education in college and postgraduate, she don't? I mean, your grammar...
I'm sorry, but I slipped up. I'm very tired. She doesn't put... I said to her, don't put that candy out until 2 days before Halloween. If you do, I'm going to have to engage in simulated acts of domestic aggression. She did. So I said to her, tonight, I'm going to beat your face in. And she said, have at it. And she's, you know, making soup. And I'm swinging my fists like I'm punching her in the face, and I'm not connecting. Meanwhile, she's making soup and setting the table. You laughing?
Yes.
What's so funny, Phil? I'm a psychologist. Tell me.
What's so funny, Phil? I'm a psychologist. Tell me. She's making soup and she's setting the table, and what are you doing?
Boy, you really strain your voice. She's making soup and she's at the table. What are you doing? That's what you just sounded like, just then.
You want me to tell you what you sound like, Doc?
No.
Okay. She's making soup and setting the table, and what are you doing?
I am engaged in... I'm pretending like I'm beating her face in.
Are you swinging at her?
Yes. What? God, are you kidding with that question? What point would there be in not?
So I'm just going to... I want to imagine this. If you just forgive me for a moment here, Doc. And by the way, I'm sorry for the my audience. I've had that picture of John Paul McCartney and this lady Shovel. So she's setting the table, and you're throwing punches, and you're just throwing these punches as I'm doing on... Do you see the video cast? I don't know whether you're watching the video cast or not. Do you see what I was doing?
Yes, I saw you. Yes, that's exactly what we're doing.
While she's setting the table and making soup.
Yes, and she also, at one point, and I guess she'll find fault with this, but she needed to use the toilet, and I followed her in there while she was using the toilet.
So while she's sitting on the toilet, what were you doing?
I think I already told you, Mr. Hendry, I am simulating beating her face in for not doing what I told her to do. So I'm swinging and wailing away. You know, you laugh if you want, but I mean, I beat her face in. And
no, you didn't. You never even touched her.
I never even touched... That's not the point. The point is I was landing in my mind some very good punches. Do you understand? So what this is what I mean, Mr. Henry, and this is why I was talking to you.
This is the weirdest thing I ever heard, Ben. I've never heard of simulated domestic aggression. And I've never heard of a guy pretending like he's swinging on a woman when he gets out of... And by the way, doctor, don't you think that there's a little something wrong with you?
Here we go. Are you going to play psychologist?
No, I'm asking. I'm asking you a question. You, is there anything wrong with you when you want to beat a woman's face in because she put the Halloween candy out too early?
No, there's nothing wrong. What do you mean, is there anything wrong? It's not about the Halloween candy. It's about that I told her what to do, and she didn't do it.
You told her? I didn't understand that.
Yeah, I'll bet you didn't. You want to hear my speech impediment?
No, I didn't understand what you said.
I said, I told her what to do, and she didn't do it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Let's go to Charlie. Hi, Charlie, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hello, Phil. Good to be on your program. Well, your guest here is talking about wailing on a woman fictitiously. I wonder if he's a fictitious psychologist.
No, sir, I can assure you that I'm not.
All right, very good. I am married to a woman for 41 years, and we have had our scrapes, believe me. And I don't think I have ever, certainly I know I've never beaten my wife, nor would I ever countenance anyone who beat their wives, nor would I countenance my son to physically strike either his sister or his current wife. So the idea that even if it is simulated, I find to be very destructive, doctor.
Let me explain something.
No, hold on. No, you've explained enough. Has anyone ever simulated beating you up? Do you ever allow your wife to simulate beating you up?
As a matter of fact, yes, I do, sir. Yes, I do.
You do?
Yes, I do.
And can you tell me, could you tell Mr. Henry and the people that are listening, what have you allowed her to do? How does she beat you up?
Well, I will tell you. My wife, Tammy, was so angry at me one night that she wanted to simulate taking a knife and doing, I think you know what I mean, and then throwing it in the garbage disposal.
Oh, boy.
Are you kidding?
No, you asked me a question. I'm giving you the answer.
And did you allow her to do this?
What's to allow? She's not putting a hand on me. She's not laying a hand. She's pretending like she's sawing it off, and then she goes and throws an invisible one.
You know, if anybody walked into your home while this stuff is going on, I think you'd be committed.
Well, Mr. Henry, fortunately, I'm the doctor. You're not. You're not going to commit me when I can say to the guy that's there with a butterfly net, hi, I'm the doctor. Why don't you go ahead and take Mr. Henry?
You know, this is absolutely ridiculous, and I agree with Phil. I don't know what good mental hygiene is, and I don't certainly presume to tell you your business. But you're telling Mr. Henry and me that you allowed your wife to pretend as if she was cutting off your penis.
That's correct, yes.
And then pretending she was holding it and pretended to throw it into a garbage disposal.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
That is the most ass... That's just the most ass thing I ever heard. Thank you very much, Mr. Henry.
What did he say? He said the most ass thing he ever heard?
That gentleman was, I think, in shock and was looking for the word to use and couldn't find it. Myself included, I think.
He was looking for your name?
No, I know how he... I know how the guy feels. So in his house, they don't commit real violence on each other. It's simulated because he's a psychologist and his wife simulated doing a bobbit on him. And then taking the invisible one and throwing it into the garbage disposal. Okay, we'll be back with more here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. And also the Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman debate on Paul McCartney's new wife, Nancy Shevel. We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. And there's another picture on Phil TV and HD of the very happy McCartneys, Mr. and Mrs. His new wife is Nancy Shevel. You mentioned Dr. Sadler that she is from a Jewish trucking, Jewish family, raised Jewish. Her father is Myron Shevel. He is the chairman and CEO of New England Motor Freight Incorporated, responsible for the overall strategic direction of the company. Why did you mention that she's Jewish?
Why did I mention that she's Jewish?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a very standard thing to say, you know. It's very standard to mention if someone is Jewish. I don't understand your question.
You don't understand my question. Did you mention that she's Jewish the same way that we always mention if someone's Episcopalian, or?
No, I didn't know. I mentioned that she's Jewish the same way that we would mention that someone is of, is Armenian or.
Armenian.
Well, it is an ethnicity, Mr. Hendry, as well as a faith.
All right, fine. Do we mention, for instance, if Phil Hendry were to be married, which I was, I didn't see in any of the announcements, and there were quite a few, that Mr. Hendry, an Irish-American...
What? I don't get it.
You don't get it because I'm drawing a very... I wonder why it is we always have to bring up if someone's Jewish or not.
Well, I think it's given the history of our country and our culture, and given what, and you're going to think I'm anti-Semitic, and I'm not anti-Semitic, but given we...
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
You don't want to say nothing about him or being Jewish. You want to say the Jews have caused a lot of problems.
Who is that? Who is that imbecile?
That's one of... That was one of my staff members, that imbecile.
Well, no, I didn't want to say that Jews cause problems. But okay. I mean, the world went to war. And
you know what, Dr. Sadler? You from the beginning, you'd had nothing to say that was of any value. The fact that he can't stand the sight of her. Is that because she's Jewish?
Shoe fits. You know, you're going to have to...
That's all I needed to hear, you know.
Well, why'd you hang up on him?
Because he's an idiot! What a jackass. And you know something? I swear to God, it happens all the time. Now, I read this notice in the New York Observer. I wouldn't know the New York Observer man from a roll of toilet paper. I don't. What is the New York Observer? Is that a online newspaper?
Yeah, I think so, man. Well, I don't know. It might be in print.
Well, they're the ones that bring up, she's from a Jewish family. Why is that important? Why is that important? We don't bring up that she comes from a family that's French. Okay, so let's get rid of the ethnicity. Let's talk about religion, all right? Do we bring up that someone's Episcopalian, Presbyterian, Methodist? Do we bring up they're Baptist? Do we bring up they're Catholic all the time? No, we do not. I can answer that question. No, we do not. So why is it important every damn time I see something having to do with the society pages? Maybe it's because they used to keep the Jews out of all the country clubs. Is that it?
What do you mean?
I mean in terms of society, as in country clubs, as in private clubs, as in neighborhoods, this kind of a thing. They used to lock Jews out of the clubs as much as they kept black people out. So maybe it's a holdover from those days when we see the announcement of the betrothal of someone. She comes from a Jewish family. What's that about, you know?
Well, maybe they're trying to say, hey, look, this is really good. Okay, he's marrying a Jew.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, it's really good, man. McCartney's marrying a Jew. No, I'll tell you what it is. It's as simple as the nose on your face, and yours too, bud. It's a holdover from the days when you wanted to make sure you kept track of all the Jews. That's what it is.
I don't know, man. I think you're being unfair.
No, I'm not being unfair. There's absolutely no reason for anybody to bring up the fact that that young woman comes from a Jewish family any more than anybody would bring up the fact that Phil Hendry comes from a Irish-American family, or Bud, you come from a jackball family, or whatever. You know.
They'll always talk about somebody being black.
No, they don't. They'll say someone's African-American, but they don't always say that, because it's obvious. By the way, she's black. Well, I see the picture of her.
Yeah, so you can't tell someone's Jewish, so you gotta let them know.
Yeah, well, that's the point that I'm making, Bud. Why do we got to keep tabs on the Jewish people? This woman, Shevel, she's Jewish, just want to let you know, just check off your little I'm following the Jewish people list. Check, check. Another Jewish person, check, 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 check. You know. And that's not the only newspaper I saw it in, the New York Observer or whatever the hell you call it, that online newspaper. I saw it in a couple of other, I saw it at least mentioned in a couple of other articles on Google, on the search engine Google. I don't know where else anything is. Here is her father. His name is Myron P. Shevel.
Well, that ought to be obvious. I'd say father's name is Myron.
What's obvious about that?
Only a Jewish guy's named Myron.
Well, come on, will you? That's like saying only black guys are named Herb.
Well, they are.
Yeah.
Okay. My dad's name was Herb, though.
Yeah, but that's back when all the, when white people were called that.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot, bud. Boy, what would I do without you, man? That was back when white people were called that. Great. Mr. Shevel served as executive vice president, chief operating officer of Eastern, a publicly held company located in New Jersey. So the family's from Jersey. He runs the New England Motor Freight Company. He is also the chairman of something called the Shevel Group of Companies. This is a family that's very well, their money is in a lot of places. They have real estate, they've got trucking, they have logistics companies, which include Carrier Logistics, Eastern Freightways, Phoenix Motor Express, Apex Transportation. So the family is very heavy into the trucking business. New England World Transport and a company called NEMF of Canada. So that's their thing. And this is born of the fascination that the father, Mr. Shevel, Mike Shevel had, or Myron, with trucking from the time he was 13 years of age. Now, his daughter, Nancy, is one of the executives with New England Motor Freight. I think she's a vice president. So, you know, what we've got here is a family that is in a particular industry, the trucking industry. They got all kinds of money. And they have all kinds of social standing. And so she's not at all impressed or otherwise put off or put on by his money, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, even if they got all kind of money, that's a trucking company, man. When's the last time is she going to go meet a rock star and stuff?
Dude, if you got enough money, it buys your way into anything. Don't even worry about it. Don't even worry about it. You got enough bread? She doesn't have to have met rock stars. She's probably met presidents. Gives a crap about rock stars. She's probably met Nobel Prize winners. She's probably met some of the most eminent people in all other walks of life. So, anyway, having said all that, good luck to them. Looks like a pretty good match to me. We're going to be right back. We have Robert and Bud. You guys ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
They're going to have their debate on Nancy Shevel or whatever else. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And I just said that like one of our northern neighbors talking about, didn't I?
Yeah, it's kind of like a Canadian, but not too bad.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, Bud, you and Robert are going to have the Bud and Robert debate tonight. That will happen in our next quarter hour, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. What we're going to talk about is what we was talking about in the last hour, about whether or not... I forget what it was. What was this about?
More about, like, about that lady, if she had one leg or something?
No. It's about the one-legged wife.
Yeah.
Fine. I'm not even going to, you know, for a moment there, I found myself saying, oh, this is a bad idea. No. We'll let you just, whatever you guys want to debate, okay? So it's about the one-legged wife.
Yeah, the will of Paul McCartney. Unless we change our mind.
Yeah, we might want to do something different.
Whatever, that's fine. Okay. So that'll be in the next quarter hour as Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard debate Paul McCartney's one-legged wife and, you know, whatever. All right, so... I want to recommend a movie. Should I get into this or not? I don't know.
I think it's pretty interesting.
Well, I saw a flick today. You guys got to see this movie. It's a, I'm not the biggest TCM watcher. I do occasionally go over to their free channel, not because it's free. I mean, all of the stuff is free, but I like to see what they have on demand. But I saw a flick today. It was the greatest movie in the world. And it was Cape, it was like Cape Fear, only the guy that does the stalking is the good guy. And it was a movie called Act of Violence. You got to see this flick. It takes place in California, and the war, World War II has just ended, and everybody's come home, and now they're having their lives. And the one of these guys is played by Van Heflin, and he is he's a builder, he's a contractor, he's building beautiful homes, this, that, this, that. He's got a wife, played by a very young Janet Leigh, who is like, or Janet Leigh. I keep wanting to call her Janet Leigh, and not for the reason you think, you know.
Well, how do you spell it?
L-E-I-G-H.
Yeah, that's Lee.
No, it ain't. It's Lee. Janet Lee. Very young Janet Lee, and boy, was she smoking hot when she was, however old she was when this movie was made. I don't know how old. Maybe late 20s. And anyway, so this guy is a veteran, like a lot of men were, and they've all come home. But there's only one problem. Just like in Cape Fear, this guy's family's being stalked by a really angry guy with a grudge. And that guy's played by Robert Ryan. And he walks with this exaggerated, this really bad limp. I say exaggerated. It's a really bad limp. And he wants to find this Van Heflin, and he's got a gun, and he's going to kill this guy. All right. Well, here's where the movie gets really interesting. You see, he's got a good reason. Unlike in Cape Fear, where the character wants to kill the lawyer and his wife and his daughter because he's just a psycho and he can't stand the fact that he's a bad man and he went to prison and somebody put him there and so he wants to, you know, get payback that way. This dude that is stalking this wholesome, clean-cut American guy, this former comrade of his in the war, has a good reason for killing this guy. But you don't know that yet. Now, I tell you, this flick is great, and I'm unlike other movies I've talked about, I will not spoil it for you. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to give it away.
Yeah, but you said that in the movie...
Shut up, bud. I'll kill you this time, man. I mean it. Don't give it away. You're just going to have to watch it, but I'm telling you, it's dynamite. And I'll just tell you this much, that the two characters, the two main characters, Van Heflin and Robert Ryan's characters... were comrades in World War II and were friends and shared the same aircraft. They were both pilots. They were aviators in the war. So that's that. And then they come home, and it's a great snapshot of post-war America. It's sort of the optimism that was happening in the country at that time, the incredible economic expansion that was happening. So you can see this guy he's a builder. He's building homes And along comes this thing. It's really, really cool. And I know that they were doing it. Like Nicholas Ray, who was the director of Rebel Without a Cause, I think he
turned 100 today.
No, he didn't turn 100 today. If he was alive, he would have turned 100.
Yeah, man, that guy ain't alive, man. He only had one eye.
Oh.
Well, what's that got to do with it?
I don't know. How long does a guy with one eye live?
I don't know. What is it with you guys anyway? Only had one eye, and you're going to debate about one leg? What do you mean he only had one eye?
Yeah, I've seen a picture of him and everything. He had a patch over his eye.
Yeah, maybe he had astigmatism.
What's that mean?
Sometimes you got to put a patch on your eye to strengthen up the other eyeball, but a lot of people wear a patch because it make them look like a pirate.
Yeah, sure.
I swear to God.
I don't know anything about that, man. So they put a patch over your eye to strengthen the other eye.
Yeah, on account of you got astigmatism.
Huh, didn't know that. Yeah, a lot of guys, it used to be if you saw a guy with a patch over his eye, you thought he'd been in a bar fight or something.
Yeah, be like a pirate or something.
Yeah. But, I mean, who would wear a patch over their eye if they could wear, like, a fake eye or something?
I wouldn't wear a fake eye, because the eyeball doesn't move.
No, that's wrong. The eyes that they have now, the fake eyes that they have now, I think they do shift around, don't they?
I don't know, man. I've seen Sammy Davis Jr., his eyeball stayed put. It didn't move or anything. So he'd be over looking at you, and the eyeball's still looking straight ahead.
Yeah, the least they do if they make an eyeball is to have the eyeball look at a place where you would normally look, you know?
No, I don't.
Well, in other words, if you got to have a glass eye, and your eyeball's moving all over the place, wouldn't you have the glass eye look at where you most usually would look?
What do you mean where you most usually would look, bud? Where is that?
I don't know. It's straight ahead.
Okay, well, if you have a glass eye, probably that's what they'd have the eye looking straight ahead.
Well, yeah, but it looks weird on Sammy Davis Jr.
Sammy Davis Jr. got a glass eye, but oh, well, you get out of here, both of you idiots.
I'm just telling you, Sammy Davis Jr.'s eyeball never moved.
All right, so it never moved. I don't know. I don't know anything about it, man. I don't know anything about how those prosthetics work. God bless the people that have to use them. I don't, and I consider myself very fortunate, and bless their hearts, the people that have to deal with that. The eyeball looks straight ahead. Where do I usually look? Well, I guess I usually look straight ahead.
Well, how come it looks funny?
But there's no way that you can predict where does a guy usually look. Have the eye, you mean, you know, more often than not, the eye will be pointed in the same direction as the other eye? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It's impossible, man, to come up with some silly ass. Shining light on $4.7 billion solar loans. Oh, baby. Baby, baby, baby. The Solyndra probe is getting hotter, baby. House Oversight Committee Chairman Daryl Issa is expanding the investigation to include more than $4.7 billion. How come this is always led by the opposition party? Why isn't it just, you know, in other words, if we were truly a nonpartisan country, had a nonpartisan approach to solving problems, which we don't have, even though we like to think that we do, why has it got to be a Republican that's ferreting this stuff out? Are there any Democrats that are looking into this stuff? It's the House Oversight Committee, I understand that. But the chairman of it is a Republican, Daryl Issa, and he is very fascinated by this investigation, and he is going to keep expanding the investigation. Now, it includes more than $4.7 billion in federal loans the Obama administration rushed to solar power companies last month. So now he wants to investigate all of the solar power companies. This is going to be a nightmare, folks. The investigation originally focused on the $535 million federal loan lost when politically connected Solyndra went bankrupt. But now, this guy, Issa, we all, for ice cream. Anyway, this is going to involve all the solar power companies that the Obama administration has lent money to. I suppose that is the most prudent thing to do. And yet, these were monies, ladies and gentlemen, that were given to these companies last month. The Solyndra problem emerged during the summer. I don't know. I could be crazy. But I don't know that it is the most prudent thing in the world to start throwing money at solar companies, solar power companies, when you've got one that's already gone belly up and you're going to have most likely an investigation around and a whole lot of really lost money. And let's just start throwing all of this money and see whether it sticks. I think people who are really cynical and really think Obama is the scum of the earth and the Antichrist, I think they're all on the same page on this one. We've got to investigate everything the guy's ever done. And I don't think that's the smartest move. I really don't. Boy, we need leadership. Folks, forget about Obama. All right, if you don't like him, you don't think he's a good president, great. Who have we got? Well, he's supposed to lead. He's the president. All right, I understand he's supposed to lead. How does the guy lead if he's got everybody in the world against him, okay? If he's got the Republicans saying he's a socialist, if the country hates his guts, okay, fine. I guess the verdict's in. We made a mistake. He was elected president. He shouldn't be president. He stinks. Stop him at all costs. This, that, this, that, this, that. Who have we got besides him? Anybody want to raise their hand and tell me who can take the tiller of government, if you will, the helm of government, and negotiate these waters while we wait for another election? Are we supposed to sit on our ass with our thumb parked in our ear and not do anything while the country goes to hell in a handcart? What do you suggest? Anybody got any ideas? The answer to that question is a big, fat, resounding no. Nobody's got any ideas. Nobody's taking this seriously. People forget, you know, what America... America is a country where individuals pursue individual dreams. The only reason in the world why anybody thinks about the government is because it's the government that has ensured these freedoms. by way of the Constitution. Otherwise, we wouldn't give it a second thought. We're so immersed in the marvelousness and the glory and the glamour that is our own lives. And that's as it should be. That is mankind. That is the status. That's, forget about all the other ideals that you may believe in, how we're supposed to love each other. That's all marvelous, and I'm sure someday we may all come to a realization. But the reality, folks, the existential reality, the Kafka reality, if you will, is that we're into us, and that's it. Every time I hear somebody open their big fat yap about what ought to be done, I'm thinking that guy is really only speaking out of self-interest. That's the human condition. It doesn't piss me off. It doesn't make me angry. I'm not disgusted by it. I revel in my fellow man. That's who we are. So now we're faced with something where it's going to take a little extra. Now you got to kind of get your head out of your own ass, and you got to pay attention to what's happening in Washington. You don't learn it on the run. It doesn't take you 5 minutes to figure it out. You got to know what the hell is going on, and you got to study it, and you can't just open your mouth and go, ba, 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 and out come pearls of wisdom, because that's not the way it goes. But that's what's happening anyway. A whole lot of people late to the party are giving their opinion. And what's it worth? Well, a whole lot of people late to the party are giving their big fat opinion about all kinds of things, and that includes people that are in the government, people in public service. Some of them don't know what they're saying either. So I don't blame you, man. I think Obama blew it. I think whoever's involved in this Solyndra, these guys, they blew it. But I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater, man. And I'll tell you something else. If you spend the next year and a half looking at everything that was done wrong, and we're never going to ever get out of this. We're always going to be indicting the other party. We're always going to be looking for somebody to put on trial. We're always going to be looking for someone to impeach. We're always going to be looking for some criminal. We're always going to be self-righteous, sanctimonious asses pounding our chests and talking about how evil the other side is. And I'll tell you, while I endorse the idea that we need to rethink how we make money in this country, and that's why I like Occupy Wall Street. These clowns out on that bridge and that whole Occupy Wall Street or Occupy Your Mom or whatever the hell they're calling it.
Yeah, Occupy Your Mom.
I know. I mean, those cats are losing credibility by the second. Every time they open their mouth to a camera, any camera, it's getting dumber and dumber. All right, speaking of dumber and dumber.
It's time for our debate.
Exactly. Bud and Robert next on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here. And don't forget, our website is philhendryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
By the way, and welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Now, we are about to initiate a new feature on the show, which is the Bud and Robert debate. But I haven't heard you guys do an iron swine.
Oh, we're going to do an iron swine tomorrow. We have an iron swine tomorrow. We just haven't had time to think it up.
Yeah, but we don't want to say what it is or nothing.
No, don't say what it is. But so that's tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, it's time now for our Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard debate. Tonight, I think you're debating Heather Mills and her one leg. Is that it?
That is correct, yeah. What do you want to do?
You start. Hold on. You start, and then I'll do.
All right. Paul McCartney, he married a lady. She didn't have one leg. The lady he married now is Jewish. The lady he married was one-legged, but she was a model. And that still probably he thought she was hot.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had to know she had one leg, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, she had to know if they were nude, and I don't want to say anything about that they probably were nude, you know, before when he was married.
Yeah, okay. So then he knew if they got nude, they got nude, you know, and like they got, what do you call it?
If they had intimacy.
Yeah, then he'd know. That she had one leg.
Okay, yeah, that much we know. So he must have loved her, because if you don't love nobody, I mean, if you don't love nobody and you're just going to marry a girl for sex, let's say, wouldn't you marry one with two legs? The answer, of course, is yes, you would.
Yeah, so we're in agreement on that one. Now, to come to another, did he love the lady he married to now. See?
Well, she's got both legs.
Yeah, but do you know that? That we're not hearing anything about how many legs she got. But let's say she's got both legs. Now he's married to a lady. Does he love her? She's Jewish. She comes from New Jersey. Her dad is like a trucker or something. I don't know. I would have to say I agree with Phil that he does love her.
Yeah, okay. But you said one thing there that you said she's Jewish. Can Paul McCartney love a Jewish girl? Yeah, because he's a hippie and everything there. But considering the fact that his first wife had breast cancer, the second wife had one leg, you got to ask what's wrong with this one. Is she missing a boob or what, you know?
What are you talking about?
Okay, figure it out. The first wife got breast cancer. The second wife had one leg. Now, the new wife, is she missing? It could be that she's missing something.
Well, I mean, don't you think he'd say something about it?
Why? Why is he going to say anything? Was he going to say, oh, by the way, I'm marrying a girl and she's only got one boob?
Well, no, but I mean, she'd say something. Or be in a medical file or something like that.
What do you mean medical file?
The newspaper people, man, are going to look up a medical file and find out the girl had one boob.
Oh, yeah, right. So you're going to tell me they're going to go look at a medical file. She's got one boob, and she's marrying Paul McCartney. Nancy Shevel of New Jersey, who come from a Jewish family, and she's got one boob, and she's marrying a Beatle. Doubt it.
Well.
Doubt it.
Well, all right, man, but I'm just saying.
Doubt it.
I'm saying the news media would say that.
Doubt it.
Hey, man, you can't just keep saying doubt it. You don't think the news media would look into that?
Doubt it.
Okay, bud, you can't just keep saying doubt it, okay?
I did.
Yeah, I know you did, but that's not a good debating technique, is it?
Doubt it.
Shut up.
I win.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do, because Phil had to jump in and say, shut up about doubt it, doubt it.
That doesn't mean he wins, does it?
Nobody wins. No one wins. There's no winner. There's no loser here. We want to hear you guys debate the issues of the day. And thank you very much. I think you did a splendid job there debating whether or not Nancy Shevel is missing a body part.
Well, that wasn't what it's supposed to be about. That's how it done got, though.
No, I know that. And by the way, both of you gentlemen, that's how it done got. You guys are going to really have to do reading and work on your elocution and all of these things, because your grammar is a horror story. Your grammar in and of itself is a crime, a murder scene. I did done do it.
Doubt it.
Okay. So that was very worthwhile. Thank you very much, guys. I'm not being facetious. I'm being, you know, not that it really, you know, it's not sparking all that much inside of me, but someone may probably wonder, is there something wrong with Nancy Shevel? Just as a point, Paul McCartney didn't marry Linda McCartney knowing she had breast cancer. She didn't have breast cancer.
When?
When he married her.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, I'm so grateful that you guys see the sense in that, because he married the young lady back in the late 60s, early 70s. She was a kid, she was a young girl, and he married her, and she got breast cancer later on in life. So you can't say that this is some pattern. Paul McCartney married a girl with breast cancer, married a girl with one leg. There's got to be something wrong with this girl. All right, we'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with more of our news and information hour, and philhendryshow.com as well.
Phil Hendry.
Doubt it.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show. You know the rest. Oh, yeah.
But you think of the debate we had.
I already told you what I thought of the debate. It's fine. And I want you guys to refine your elocution, your speaking, blah, 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 blah. And I also want you to work on another Iron Swine. As you know, that's very popular.
Yeah, we're going to get an Iron Swine coming up probably tomorrow.
Very good. All right, now, I wanted to mention to you guys that I saw here as I was scrolling, as we do our multimedia search here on philhendryshow.com, and when we have our Phil TV and HD, as we do tonight, sometimes we have our multimedia approach where we will show you things from the internet. I just showed a picture, in fact, of an article called Solyndra and Solar versus the Republicans. And a little graphic there that shows Uncle Sam rolling up his sleeves, and it says, get involved, it's time to take America back. All right. Now, I thought it was very interesting because I was on an airplane in the 90s when Clinton was still president, and I heard on this aircraft, as I'd heard before, but I heard on this aircraft spoken at a level of voice which is about right here. And we all know and we've all heard people who are, even though that they are in public there and they're speaking to just one person, their voice is carrying and they're talking really loud. Are they doing it on purpose? I don't know. Some people don't realize how loud they're speaking. I was in a restaurant one time, and it's it was the restaurant of a resort that I like to go to in the desert. It's a very nice joint. And I like this place because there's spas and there's swimming, and it's a cool... I like to go to the desert because I like it nice and hot sometimes. I can't take the cold, man. I hate it. I've hated the cold ever since I was a kid. I would much rather be in 100-degree heat than in bloody cold weather. I can't stand it. But be that as it may, I'm sitting there one morning having breakfast, and there's a couple. There's a woman and a man. And they... Obviously, it was a romantic weekend. How do I know? Because she let me and everyone know it in the restaurant, even though she was speaking directly to him. And I remember he was holding her hand, and she was smiling. Oh, thank you very much for this wonderful weekend. And I want to thank you. This is the most glorious time. And oh, boy, you know.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. And it was really, and then she got mad. How do you like the grapefruit? I think it's pretty good, too. You know? So there I am on this airplane. And I hear this guy, and he's, yeah, I'll tell you what, Bill, and he's talking like this, and I want my country back, you know? Yeah, you know, because they were talking about Clinton. And Clinton and the other thing, and I want my country back. So now this guy has been talking at this high-toned voice, and he sits down, he's got himself a laptop computer, and he puts it on that serving tray, and he opens that damn thing up, and he starts all of a sudden playing some electronic country music out of that thing. So now he's talking real loud, just like this, and out of that computer is coming, I got nothing against country music, understand, but this guy's big, fat, loud voice, along with his, it was driving me nuts, and so he made the mistake of leaning over and looking at me and saying, if this is too loud, you just tell me. I said, it's too loud. Just like me, within seconds. I mean, not even seconds, within a half a second. If this is too loud, let me know and I'll turn it down. Yeah, it's too loud, man. And, of course, he gave me a second look like what a, you know, A-S in a
hole.
Yeah. And he turned that crap down. And I'll tell you something else. Not that I had any great effect on him, but maybe it was just the fact that somebody finally said, just shut up. And I didn't hear a peep out of this guy for the rest of the trip. I don't think I did. Maybe I'm wrong. But I don't remember him bothering me anymore. Let me put it that way. I don't give a damn what a guy is, you know, talking about necessarily. It's the, hey, and another thing, it's talking up here, you know? Yeah, I'm sure we've all been in restaurants. And there's people talk at a certain tone. I don't know. Maybe it's you and I and a lot of us learned that when you're in a public place that you modulate your voice perhaps lower for a couple of reasons. One, you don't want everybody in the world knowing your business. That's normal. And number two, you certainly don't want to disturb anyone that may be disturbed by your loud talk unless you're drunk. If you're drunk, all bets are off. Then you're saying things really loud that are embarrassing, stupid, cruel, crude, and anything else. I remember being at a golf tournament once in Baja, Mexico, and we'd finished the first round, and we rolled up the coast from this place called Baja Mar to the very famous, what's the name of that lobster place in Baja? You guys all know it. It's the famous lobster joint. It was years and years ago. It was back when that Russian guy still owned it. I don't know who owns it now. But it was a great lot. It was a freaking, you know, it was a motel. You could rent rooms there. But everybody went there for the California lobster, which basically California lobster is not Maine lobster. California lobster is like big, giant crayfish. And, but it's delicious. And out here in California, we take our California lobster, we barbecue it, or we grill it a little bit, yeah. I'm not trying to say it's as good as Maine lobster. No, it isn't, and I get that, but that's all we got, so... But there was a place down in Baja for years and years, if I could remember the... Oh, I know, the La Honda. La Honda or La Fonda? La Fonda.
Jane Fonda.
Not Jane Fonda. La Fonda. Yeah. And I know that people know... There's people right now tweeting me and letting me know. But it was a great place. And you go in there and you got yourself... I'll tell you, the price was right. Because you could have all the lobster and beer. At one time, if you hit them on the right night, he had a special. All the lobster and beer for $20. $20 a person. All the lobster and all the beer you could drink. And it was wonderful. It was just wonderful. And there was a Russian guy that owned it. You guys remember the Russian guy? I don't think he owns it anymore. I went in there one night. We had finished a couple of rounds of golf. I went in. And this guy was in his element. He was betting everybody. There was a fight on that night. And I forget who was fighting. Who do you think? Who do you like to fight, huh? Who do you like to fight? Come on. And he's betting everybody, man. We're laying the money down. Oh, we had a ball. But I was in my cups that night, if you'll pardon the expression.
What's that mean, in your cups?
Drunk. And, man, I was just making with the loud, vulgar, and my friends later on were howling. Just... And I said, what the hell are you guys laughing at anyway? You, man! You're the mouth on you tonight. And I was mortified. I had no idea. I just, you know.
Well, you know, you're down in Mexico, man. You got enough beer and lobster in you. And down in like, you know, people loosen up down there.
I know, but I don't want to talk like a slob. But I was talking like a slob, so I can't take it back. But, what the hell am I doing, man? What am I talking about now? Why do I always forget what I was talking about? Well, anyway, that was a beautiful night. And we were down in Mexico, and we were eating lobster. I get off on these tangents. Oh, I know what it was. I was telling you guys about this Take Back America thing. And the fact that this guy was talking loud. So, yeah, I was talking loud in this restaurant. But the people's voices carry. And the first time I ever heard the phrase, really, and it stuck with me, take back, I want my country back, was this clown with the big voice. And I remember thinking, I want my country back. And I remember thinking, you want your country back. What about my country? You know? And of course, the unspoken challenge is, it is your country. You're just too stupid to see it. That's what he's saying to me. So if I'm to listen to him, he wants the country back, and I should join him in wanting his version of the country back, because whatever country I want back, I'm too stupid to know what I'm talking about. That's the thing. And so every 4 years, with every president, somebody wants the country back. And it was Dennis Miller, I think, who said very famously, you want the country back? Go out and vote, you dumbass. There, you get your country back. Don't you mean you want the country back? All of this dramatic language that bespeaks a mentality of revolutionary, of somehow we've been usurped, of somehow the Constitution isn't working. If there's one thing that I resent violently, and I mean it'll get me so pissed that I don't care how old I am, you know.
Bad thing gonna happen.
That's exactly right. Bad things are gonna happen. If there's one thing that I resent, and I resent it like you wouldn't believe, are these asses that use this language that we're being usurped somehow. Somehow the Constitution's in shreds. You remember that? You remember that? The Constitution's in shreds. You know, what gives people the right, with the marginal education that they have on constitutional matters to begin with, with the marginal education they have on constitutional law to begin with, and even if they think they're educated in constitutional, what gives people the right to be so ignorant in public? The Constitution's being, the Constitution has lasted since 1789. 1789.
No, 1776.
The Constitution, man.
The Constitution, not the Declaration of Independence. People are talking about how the government's broken, how we're being usurped. I have never seen, you know, I can tell you something right now. If God Almighty himself were personified for just a day, say in, oh, I don't know, the form of George Burns, and he came down to earth and he took a look at all of us, he would probably, he would either cry himself sick or laugh himself sick, one of the two. To listen to Americans talk, a country of people that never had it so good, never had it so good, and we're being usurped, and the Constitution doesn't work, and the government's broken, and this and that. I never seen such a bunch of freaking babies.
You think it's broken, though?
Maybe. No, I don't think it's broken. I just think people like to talk that way because people like to hear themselves talk, number one, and people like to feel that there is some emergency, so they'll feel challenged enough to go out and do something. We don't get up off our dead asses around here to do anything unless we feel like the sky's falling. So why not act like Chicken Little? And I'm telling you, man, this is the day and the age of Chicken Little. The sky's falling every 5 seconds. I talked to somebody the other day on Twitter. The country's going down the drain. The country's been going down the drain since 1776. The country's been going down the drain since we've had newspapers. Since we've had people standing on corners talking about it, the country has been going down the drain. What do you think they said the first time they had that whiskey rebellion out there in Pennsylvania and the president had to send federal troops out to put it down? The country's going down the drain. Where do they get off taxing our whiskey? This is a bad idea, this whole America thing. Look at this, man. All I want to do is drink some whiskey. They want to lay a tax on me, and now they're sending the troops out here to get the tax at the point of a gun? You think that being taxed and being outraged about taxes is something new? All this brave talk about guys taking the tax money from me at the point of a gun. That's exactly what happens if you don't pay your taxes. Ask old Georgie Washington, the father of our country. You know, the guy with the wig and the funny-looking face on the dollar bill? Yeah, that guy. He went out with a gun. He stuck it right in their hillbilly faces, and he said, guess what? We got a tax on your whiskey. Any problem with that? No, sir. I didn't think so. I'm George Washington. I kicked ass on the British. Now all of you hillbillies out here are going to pay up. Because guess what? We got a Revolutionary War debt. We're up to our ass and hock. We can't pay for anything. And we're going to have to start paying for stuff around here. And you guys are going to kick in. I don't give a damn whether you like it or not. That's the father of our country. So don't give me all this founders, what they thought and what they didn't think, and the Tea Party. The Tea Party, they're great people and they're patriotic people, and I understand that. Just get out of your three-cornered hats, okay? And quit acting like jackasses. Talk about the issues and quit telling me what you think Thomas Jefferson thought, because you don't know. And the same goes for you clowns out there on the progressive end of things. You Occupy Wall Street people. Pull your head out of your ass, get your crap together, and get back to me. Thank you.
Hey!
Thanks very much, bud.
Pretty good.
All right, we're going to be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Although we are thinking of dropping show and just the world-famous Phil Henry. See if that draws any more people. We'll be right back with our final segment here on our News and Information Hour.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Hey, welcome back. 877-876-PHIL is our number. We're actually going to open up the phone a little bit here and take a phone call. I do want to remind you we're online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com, where you can go and get a backstage pass and listen to Thousands of hours of archive material. Get our daily podcast of the radio show. Our podcast is a three-hour radio show minus the commercials, okay? Now, you may, you know, somebody's podcast. Wow, I listen to the so-and-so podcast. Wow, 40 minutes. Ooh, wow. Give the man a cigar. Ours is our three-hour radio show. We also have our Classic Phil podcast, but we've got hours and hours and hours and hours and thousands of hours of archived radio on our website. So check it out at philhendryshow.com. And you can also see our five-day video archive. And on our video archive, of course, is our Saturday night show, of course, which is local only to Los Angeles. But everybody with a backstage pass can see it. 877-876-PHIL. Dean, how are you?
Well, Phil, I was doing very well until I tuned you in and heard you say that progressives... I heard you say something that hurt me a little bit. You said progressives don't have the guts to see the Middle East as it should be seen.
Well, you must have a backstage pass because I said that off the air.
Well, yes, you did. You said that during your commercial break.
Yeah, I did. I was talking to Dan. And I said how can you look at the Iranian Revolution and what happened in Egypt and what happened in Tunisia and what's happened in Syria and what continues to happen in other parts of the Middle East? How can you look at that and say that the invasion of Iraq had absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with it?
Yeah, right. And then you said that progressives don't have, and I remember how you said it. You said progressives don't have the guts. You looked into the camera and went, guts, like that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you that really, when you say I don't have the guts, I don't have the guts to do what?
What I said.
Well, I have the guts, Phil. I have the guts to say I don't have the guts.
I didn't say you don't have the guts in general. I said you don't have the guts to look at that situation.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I was calling. What situation are you talking about again?
What is it with you, man? You called me up and said that you heard me say that it was, I forget what I said now.
I forget what you said. All I remember is you said I don't have the guts.
I didn't say you. I said every progressive.
I just think it's wrong to paint people with a broad brush like that. I do have the guts. I've got the guts. I've got the guts, all right?
All right, you got the guts. I said the progressives don't have the guts to admit the invasion of Iraq might have stimulated much of what we have seen in the Middle East in terms of evolution toward or the muscling toward democracy. I think it's absolutely ignorant not to think that had no impact.
Not to think it had no impact?
Not to think it had impact, I should say.
I don't understand what you're saying. I'm just, I worry that... When you say I don't have the guts.
You know what? The only reason why you called is because you didn't like me saying that you don't have the guts.
Yes.
You don't know what I was talking about. You don't know why I was talking about it. You don't care. You're just saying you don't like being told you don't have the guts.
Well, I don't know what you were talking about, but I do know you said that I didn't have the guts.
And I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about every progressive. It wasn't an individual, personal thing, okay?
Right, but you meant me.
Get rid of him, will you?
Well, wait a minute, Phil.
Bud, don't put these psycho cases through, okay?
You had the guy of the year last night.
Yeah, he was one of your guests.
He was one of my guests. What are these people? Don't put any guests. This guy is... He's a mess. So just don't put these people... You don't have the guts. You said that I don't have the guts.
Well, what was he saying?
He was upset with the fact that I said that he didn't have the guts. Progressives didn't have the guts. The guts to admit that the war in Iraq may have been a major spark to what was going... What happened later, the so-called Arab Spring. They don't want to admit that. Okay? They don't have the guts.
Yeah, so he was upset and you said he didn't have the guts.
That's exactly what I'm telling you. Never mind. We got to go. We got to split. We have to heave-ho, baby. We got to move and groove. We got to jam up and jelly tight. This has been the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our show is produced by Dan Northcraft, Fred Scotty, and Chris Johnson, and me, Phil Hendry. Join us at philhendryshow.com for all of our archived audio, video, and more, our daily podcast. Get a backstage pass and find out what it are all about. And by the way, we have many, many more exciting announcements to make concerning our website and our overall presence on the World Wide Web. And I think we want to thank Grade A Radio for one of the ideas tonight, and maybe even Drink Duff 77. Until then, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Good night.
Phil Hendry.